Hello, this is Joe Shirey here at TechEd. I'm here today with Clemens Vasters, and we're going to talk a little bit about what he's been up to with Azure and .NET Services. So welcome, Clemens.
Thank you for having me.
Great to be here today. Wanted to ask you a little bit about, first, your role. What are you doing here at TechEd? What are you doing on the Azure team and specifically on the .NET Services team?
Yeah, so I'm in the .NET Services team, part of the Azure Services platform, and I'm the technical lead for the .NET Service Bus. So in terms of a role, that's a program manager role and a developer role sort of at the same time. So that's a relatively unusual title inside of Microsoft. So I'm a little bit architect, I'm a little bit program manager, I'm a little bit dev.
Oh, that sounds like actually kind of a fun role.
It's what I wanted, and that's what I luckily got.
Excellent. So I think a lot of people I know have seen the Azure layer cake slide, and they're in kind of the middle in the small box of this thing called .NET Services. And when I talk to a lot of people, they really aren't quite sure what it is. They understand the Azure compute stuff, and they understand the Azure database, but the .NET Services is kind of a little mystery in the middle. Can you give us kind of a little description of what it is and how it kind of fits into the whole platform?
Yes. .NET Services is the catchy way we're saying that is it's in the software plus services strategy, it's the plus. So it's .NET Services is a way to communicate between applications you have already running or have those applications talk to applications that sit up in the cloud.
Mm-hmm.
So we're a communications platform, and we also have further capabilities in the orchestration area, workflow, and in access control. Where we're federating access control between different places. So we're really the federation platform in the Azure services platform. One of the reasons why we're not getting as much attention as we'd like is we're not really fitting into the cloud term
right.
That analysts, our valued competitors, and some press and bloggers want to make that cloud thing. From my perspective, cloud is not about virtualization.
Right.
It's not about giving you a bunch of VMs so you can go and install things on them. It's about building applications into an infrastructure that runs large-scale applications already. My personal take is that there's only a handful of companies, I could probably not even count them to 10, that already run very vast scale web operations, and they know exactly how to run web operations right,
mm-hmm.
how to secure them right, and then have all the procedures in place and have all the facilities in place to actually run those things. There's a few obvious ones. There's Amazon, mm-hmm. there's Google, there's Yahoo, there's Microsoft. What we're doing is we're taking all that knowledge that we have from running large properties and building the facilities for it and building the operations for it, and are creating an application platform that is leveraging all that knowledge.
Mm-hmm.
And so you can benefit, you as someone who's building applications can leverage and can benefit from that experience. Not only from that experience, but also from the economy of scale that comes with it, and
right.
that is just the cost savings. We're getting pretty good deal on deals on bandwidth. We're getting pretty good deals on energy.
Right.
So that drives down the operational costs, and since we already have that capacity sitting up there, we're building it out also specifically, of course, for the platform by being able to share capacity, share workloads. Across very many machines that mix different types of applications,
right.
which is get better utilization of systems than you would get if you're just hosting a single type of application or just your applications in that system.
Right.
So for me, cloud means really the benefits of an integrated platform and the benefits of the cost savings and the benefits of those operational efficiencies. That's what I consider a cloud.
Gotcha.
So for me, the notion of some hardware vendor coming out and say, I'm building a cloud device, I don't know what that means.
Right.
If someone talks about someone goes and relabels the data center hosting operations to this is the cloud. I don't think it is because it's application hosting, and that's different from having this global network, this one large global computer.
Right.
So in that context, sorry for that, for the long elaboration.
That's all right.
We believe it's about building apps.
Mm-hmm.
And applications exist not in a single place with a terminal in front of them. I think we've moved far away from that.
Right.
So there needs to be communication between the surface that's at the that interacts with the people,
mm-hmm.
and that surface may be on a phone, that surface may be on a PC, a notebook, that surface may be really in media center, maybe anywhere.
Mm-hmm.
And how do you make that communication work? How do you communicate from a cloud hosted application to all the display surfaces, which may not be web-based?
Well, and I mean, that's kind of an age-old problem that people, as we've moved into hosted applications, I mean, as the e-commerce wave came a couple years ago, people hosted internally and then realized that they didn't want to take
yes.
on all of the ping power pop issues. So
right.
they went to external hosters, but they still needed to connect back into their back-end ERP systems.
Correct.
And they ended up either creating some private networks or VPNs to do that from the hoster. So it's kind of an age-old problem of you have existing systems.
Yes.
And you want to build new systems. And these systems don't live in stovepipes, but they need to work together in concert.
Absolutely.
You know, and that's why whenever I look at what we're doing as Microsoft in the .NET services arena, it's just really unique and one of the neatest things that we've got in the whole Azure,
yes.
Azure stack.
So I was talking about getting data to the display, getting data into people's hands.
Mm-hmm.
But when we are talking to architects, customers, they really have the problem of really bridging between their sites.
Right.
And they have problems bridging between what they imagine their cloud applications will be and assets they want to retain on-premise. And there's a lot of good reasons for why a lot of data must stay on-premise. There is regulation in very many countries outside of the United States. There's quite draconian laws in terms of privacy, which I, as a guest in this country and citizen of Germany, actually do appreciate.
Mm-hmm.
So there are rules and regulations for specific industries and for how you treat some data that makes it very hard to just move everything wholesale into the cloud.
Right.
So how do you reap the benefits of having a platform like that that gives you operational efficiency for your web properties? So you should be able to take to host a web application up in our data center infrastructure, and then still be able to talk back to your existing systems, so where you can persistently store that data compliant with all of the rules and regulations, and creating that link, that secure link. So that allows us from the cloud infrastructure to call into your systems. That's one thing that that .NET Services provides.
Now, you mentioned if you're hosting it in Microsoft's cloud, could you use this for any cloud application, whether it's hosted in Google
Absolutely.
Or in Amazon?
So. Yeah, so we have two sides sort of the story. One is what we call in quotes SOAP, and the other one we call in quotes REST. The more correct way to say that is one of the parts of the platform is leveraging the capabilities of the Microsoft platform and WebCF to the fullest extent.
Mm-hmm.
The other one is leveraging HTTP and plain HTTP protocols in the most open fashion that we can do them. So we follow, we try to do HTTP right. We implement everything that we can on established standards, community-grown standards, Atom Pub, and those things, so that whatever platform you run on, you can actually go and integrate with Service Bus.
Gotcha.
So we have demos. We've shown demos at the Mix conference where there were applications hosted in Google App Engine that were then communicating to our access control system and to the Service Bus.
Right.
So it can bridge between anywhere and anywhere else.
Gotcha. And that makes sense. You know, it brings some interesting use cases to mind. Not just I have one app and one front end, and I might want to bridge the two, but I start thinking through the scenarios of kiosks as an example.
Yes.
Where I may want to drop in a kiosk and put it into a place where I may not have control over that network, but I still need to connect in that information back to my back-end data centers.
Yes.
I guess the other thing that really comes to mind is that as this whole wave of cloud hype comes around, that everybody starts thinking that we're going to move everything to the cloud, forgetting that, except for some startups, that most people aren't writing greenfield applications.
Yes.
They're starting with assets that already exist internally. And this is a way for us to leverage those assets, not just within our own internal boundaries of our organization, but to expand those out beyond those.
Especially the kiosk story is a very interesting one. So a kiosk sits there as a way to interact with the customer. Let's say you are a state lottery, mm-hmm. and you have machines there that go and sell, you know, tickets in a self-service fashion. How do you look into those systems? Now, because you can make the argument, yeah, I'm just putting a thing there and that has a web interface. I mean, just doing that all with the web. The question is, really, are you doing that? Because you're actually accepting things. You need to print those lottery ticket receipts. Is that really just a web app?
Mm-hmm.
I would argue not. It becomes more complicated when we think about how do you manage those things. So you have hundreds of those machines spread across, you know, towns, or probably thousands of those machines, put into little convenience stores and into gas stations. How do you see inside those machines to see what they're healthy, what their status is, how they're doing? Because yes, by now we can assume for the most part that there's going to be some network connectivity, even if we have to build that into the kiosk machine. But there may be just some Wi-Fi in the store that we can also leverage. But then most of those communication channels have natural barriers, and
right.
that is, you will always be behind a NAT. You will always be at least behind two firewalls. Those machines will most definitely not be discoverable, because if you get a public IP address of some sort through your NAT, that's going to be dynamic. So how do you get to those kiosks? How do I create a link that lets me go and poke into kiosk number so-and-so?
Mm-hmm.
Unless you have a VPN and a very expensive VPN set up at that, that's going to be very difficult.
Right.
And VPNs may not work in that particular networking environment. So those kinds of cases that we're looking at, where we really have computing resources, which are bound to locations. This is nothing you can optimize. Like, that kiosk needs to be in that place.
Mm-hmm.
If you want to build an application that's sort of a control dashboard for a network of surveillance cameras, those cameras need to be at that corner of the street. You can't move that anywhere else.
Mm-hmm.
If you want to build an application that automates your billing process and you run that in the cloud, that's all good. In the end, if you need to print bills, put them into envelopes, and ship them, you can't do that in the cloud. You need to have a facility where you can actually do those things. So whenever computing touches the real world, so the physical world, you need to have a way to get from up there back to somewhere on site to do some work that touches the physical space.
Right.
And the communication link between those places, that's something that we provide, and that's what .NET services, the service bus, is for.
Gotcha. So the other thing, as I listen through this, I don't think so much about the end devices, because I can control that, but I start to think about the security of things going over the wire.
Yes.
So, I mean, take the example of security cameras, of being able to, you know, let's say that the devices themselves are locked down and we've taken mm-hmm. proper care, but the communications over the wire, well, how does .NET Services help with that and ensure that we've got secure communications going?
So there's two levels. For plain HTTP and for the most foundational SOAP capabilities that we have. So that's basically just a plain SOAP 1.1 or SOAP 1.2 envelope. We provide HTTPS. Mm-hmm. We also provide, on our NetTCP transport, we provide automatic SSL under the covers. For more sophisticated scenarios where it, let's say the customer doesn't want us to have any theoretical ability to look into that data. And we have several customers that we've been speaking to who value the ability to hide data from Microsoft. We're building, we have the capability to do so. So for all the SOAP-based communication links, so all the bindings that we provide for the service bus for WCF, we're supporting WSecurity. Mm-hmm. We're supporting WSecurity, so WSecure Conversation, WSTrust, so the whole family, everything that WCF supports, we're supporting too. And you can keep lock and key, you can keep the private key, the public key for that end-to-end communication for yourself. Yeah. We're consciously staying out of that whole WSecurity header place, and we're never inspecting, we're never making any attempt to inspect the body of the message. We're just streaming them through so that you can go and secure the message, secure on the message level, mm-hmm. and you can cryptographically prove to yourself that we have no chance of looking at your data.
Gotcha.
So you can go and rely on transport level security, which is the simplest thing to do. And then there's a theoretical, not practical, but theoretical way for that data to get exposed inside of, your data, of our data center. But you can just lock it down completely and make sure that that data gets is encrypted end to end so that it never gets exposed anywhere on the path.
Gotcha. So if I'm an architect and I'm interested in looking at this, where are my best resources to kind of come to speed and become proficient with these technologies?
So Azure.com is our starting point for the entire platform. We have a number of MSDN developer portals linked off the Azure site with a set of white papers that explain how the platform works. We have a set of SDKs for the various components of the platform. So there's the Windows Azure SDK for the foundational compute platform, where you have web worlds, worker worlds, and your storage capabilities. SQL Services has a CTP SDK, and .NET Services also has a CTP SDK. So the main starting point is Azure.com, where you can go and then get access to all those resources.
Fantastic. Well, I appreciate you taking the time today. It's excellent chatting with you. Hopefully,
it was a pleasure.
It was definitely a pleasure. Always a pleasure hanging out with you. Hopefully, we got some folks that wanted to go take a look. And I consider it the hidden gem in the Azure stack, just because the reality is that it glues things together, and that's something that's a real need, not just we're going to move everything to cloud. So that's I'm excited about the technology.
So am I. That's why I'm working on it.
Absolutely. So I appreciate you taking the time today. Thank you very much.